today's show legend, George Groves. George, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me back on.
What's it like having come on when the show was just made up? When you see the decorated list of people who follow Jews as something that you take pride in?
It is really, you know, I've got to be honest, at the start, it was such a slick professional setup that I thought it was established and been going for years. But then I look back and then you've numbered each podcast and I'm way down one of the early guests. And then, the list of names that come after, they would have been saying, you know, who is this guy? Is this show any good? And you say, look, I've had George Groves. And they're like, wow.
Wow. That George Groves was one of the launching pads for the Michael Anthony Show. Razor Ruddock was before you. And then you were just retired. A lot's changed. Yeah. You've put on 3-4 stone.
The sinking sand of despair, the smell of dread in the air. I'm head to toe in my own fear. I'm going to die, no need to cry.
See, the funny thing with, you know, people see me on TV sometimes, you know, I do a bit of TV work and they're like, wow, George Groves put on some size. But they forget TV adds £10 and retirement adds maybe £30-40. So, you know, I'm about where I should be.
The barn is looking well. It's one of the best jobs I've ever seen.
It's come back to life. Yeah.
Where'd you get it done?
In the UK, Farjo Clinic. They got a clinic in London, but they do the procedures up in Manchester. And done a terrific job, a stellar job.
There's a lot of guys I know who've got hair transplants and it looks like AstroTurf placed on top of their head.
See, that was always the concern.
But those guys are paying £3-5 grand. What does it actually take to get your hair put back on? £20 grand?
They've kindly took care of me. It's one of them deals. I think I might have got in at the, you know, at the time of the retirement when I was sort of a little bit more
well known.
Yeah.
So they used you as like an advertisement.
Well, yeah. I mean, we haven't even got to the end because I think they want to, you know, there's more to go. I'm doing really well. My hair's doing well. So at the end, there'll be a big reveal. But I can't recommend it highly enough. I mean, I got to be honest, I didn't know it bothered me as much as it did. Or I didn't know I missed it as much as when I got it back. It's a bit tedious when you got your hair's thinning and it's going and you got to keep it short just to keep it reasonable.
It added to the comeback thing though, after you lost a frotch, and then you know the way most boxers in your situation, once they get sparked out on such a big occasion, you'd never hear from them again. Like, it must be unbelievably difficult to come back from that, having kind of won the first fight and have been stopped controversially and then been knocked out in the second one off just a punch, even though you're making a good show of yourself in that fight again. You kind of came back, you kept your head down, you changed your persona. You weren't just kind of mouthy in press conferences and stuff like that. And then having the no hair, it was like you were a new character. It was nearly essential to the whole thing.
Yeah, well, you know, like Madonna, I try and reinvent myself from time to time. And it came after I lost against Badu Jack out in Vegas. So then it was like, I was dragging my heels a bit. I had the two frotch fights. Stuck with the same team because they were good team by Barry O'Connell, a ex Royal Marine strength conditioning coach. He was great. Paddy Fitzpatrick was my boxing coach, who's knowledgeable but not probably the right man to lead from the front. But you know, that was my problem, not his. And a few others, but yeah, dragged my heels. Went a year later, boxed Badu Jack out in Vegas, lost a split decision. When I felt I was better than Jack, you know, I'd made a few mistakes. And it's like, right, okay, change the team, change the look, shave the head, grow the beard. I'm going from blue to black.
Do you miss punching the head off people or getting the head punched off you? Like, is it a job you can miss? You know, the way footballers talk about missing the roar of the crowd, miss scoring goals. You can't really miss punching people about.
Yeah, I mean, every now and again, you know, if I like to pop down the gym and I watch the pros, and it's just owning someone. It's quite cool, you know, like one-on-one owning someone. And sometimes it'll be like you'll hear someone talk like they know what they're talking about, and you're like, you don't. All in all, I can say that I don't miss it. Like, the need to box and the wanting to box are two totally different things, which I realise, like, I'd like to, you know, be fighting fit and, you know, be on my weight, be super sharp, be the best athlete I could be, but I don't need to anymore. And then the fact I don't need to, I have zero desire to put myself.
By owning someone, do you mean kind of being physically in control of them?
Yeah. So you're in the ring, like, just own them. Like, you hit them at will, and they can't beat you. So
why do you think people take pleasure in that?
I don't know, maybe a narcissistic element. I think it's probably, I couldn't think of a better way.
What if you like the guy who you're toying around with, giving him a shot in the jaw? Really?
I mean, to a certain degree. I mean, you're not going to take liberties. But that was always my philosophy. It was like, I always wanted to look like I wasn't trying. You know, you see these guys in sparring and they're like waiting away and they're just swinging and they're trying to knock the guy out. And it's like, you're trying to knock them out. Yeah, it's much better if you're just playing with them, toying with them. You know, that was how I used to like to try and portray myself. And it's the same, like, you're messing about it. So if you're, I don't know, say you know a few jiu-jitsu moves or something and you're messing about with your pals at home, it's fun to own them, isn't it? You might be your best friends in the world, but if you know you can choke them out at any moment, you got that control over them.
But at that level, like, that velocity, that power, I'm semi-scared of you. Like, there's a part of me that knows, sitting here, you have a laugh, you've made a different gravy to me. You could kill me. It makes me uncomfortable. It's terrifying to think what you could do. What is that from? Childhood? Like, what's the... How? Why? Why be able to take those shots and give people those shots? What are boxers? They're mental.
Maybe. I mean, I see it in a purely skillful element. It takes a lot, and this ain't the same for all fighters, definitely not, but for me it takes a lot for me to just to flip, to actually lose it.
Do you hate someone when you're fighting them in a professional fight? Do you have to pretend to hate them?
No, total opposite. Like, I used to like to try and be emotionless. Like, I don't like you or dislike you, I think nothing of you. You know, it's just like, because if you start fighting with emotion, you know, apart from the fact you're tense up, you know, you make mistakes, you get tired, stuff like that, you just don't think with that clear.
So you view it as basically a bag with a head on it. You're kind of acting like you're in training, you're acting like you're sparring, and those shots are an art form as opposed to an act of aggression.
Yeah.
Do you ever see their face? Do you ever see their eyes mid-boxing match? Or is it just a moving body?
Yeah, I mean, that's usually with a bit of... concussion. That's usually when I get hit, I used to get that same deja vu feeling of, like, you know, it's like this figure. It was always the same size, the same way, and it was always like shuddering coming towards me. But now you just, like, you gotta have that killer instinct, I think. Not every fighter has that. You gotta have that killer instinct when the time comes, you gotta pull the trigger. You know, if you've got the guy hurt, you gotta put him away, you gotta take your chances. And that's gotta be kind of instinctive. You don't have really much time to think about that at that point.
What do you have to say about all these people who are now slowly starting to take these YouTube fighters seriously? Like, starting to talk about their skill sets, starting to talk about the fact that they might actually beat someone who's half decent. Like, do you think that a UFC fighter, your man Tyron Woodley, who has fought at a real level, he's performed in a high level of combat, do you think that he throws that fight in order to lose it? Do you think you have to be able to beat someone who's on the Disney Channel, who's been boxing for 3 years? There's no way he couldn't knock him out. Is he getting paid to lose? Are these guys getting paid to lose?
No, I very much doubt that. I think it'd be much more fun for him to put someone like Jake Paul away. But I mean, UFC fighters and boxers are totally different. And for a UFC fighter to take up boxing, you know, their stance is totally out. You know, the actual punch, the punching technique that they have is not very good, because that's not their sport. Their sport's a combination of many sports.
But what about how used they are to physicality, or just kind of that high tempo and the ability to duck, the ability to evade, core strength, take shots on the forearms, the chin they would have built up? Mm. How can you not beat a guy who started boxing at 20?
I haven't seen the fight. I've never seen Paul fight. I've never seen any of them YouTube fights. So I wouldn't know exactly. But, you know, there's some talented white-collar fighters out there. You know, people who appreciate boxing but don't really want to go all in. But now, them white-collar fighters now can turn professional. If they've got a bit of a profile to start with, they get a lot of traction. And he'll be in and amongst some decent level boxers, you know, coaches and trainers, and coaches and fighters. So I'm sure it's rubbed off him in a bit. He'll be a very good white collar fighter, but he's not a professional.
Would you fight a English YouTuber if they called you out of retirement for a payday? Like, would you fight another celebrity? Would you get into the ring with a former rugby player or some shit?
Yeah, and... I mean, who knows? The money's there. I never say never. I'd probably make a thing of it that I was like, yeah, I'll fight him, but I won't do any training. I haven't thrown a punch since 2018.
So. You haven't thrown a punch since you retired?
No, I ain't done nothing. So I'd be like, well, we'll do it on them stands. So we've got David Hayes fighting this weekend, who I know relatively well, David, and, you know, I signed to his promotional company when I turned pro, spent a few years boxing on his undercards. He's fighting a chap called Joe Fournier this weekend, who's a club promoter. He's like, I've met him a couple of times.
Has he ever fought?
He boxed. He's turned professional. He boxed a couple on. I know he boxed definitely once on one of Hayes' undercards. Then he boxed in Dominican Republic a couple of times, which there's some question marks over whether they actually took place. And now all of a sudden, I don't know what sort of fight they're having on Oscar De La Hoya's undercard. So at the moment, anything can happen. You know,
this is the future. You're going to be fighting Wayne Lineker in around 18 months. And if you look at the originality of kind of prize fighting, you go back 250 years, you had slave owners making two African-American slaves fight, and they were betting on them, and you could win freedom from slavery if you won the fight. And it kind of continued like that up until 20 years ago. Even Mike Tyson, these guys, everyone was getting robbed. There were these people from working class backgrounds being taken advantage of and beating the shit out of each other for our own enjoyment. So there was a level of kind of evilness to it. So it kind of makes sense that now they've realized, we don't need to do this anymore. We just need to build up a show. Don't hurt each other. Fight nobody who's actually capable of killing another man and maximizing the money. So the art form of actual boxing, I think the day of any young boxer coming up and taking pride in being a good fighter, being a better man than someone else with their hands, is gone. I don't think we'll ever see that again. I think Joshua Fury could be, if it even happens, why hasn't that happened? As well.
It's TV.
The same thing with Mayweather Pacquiao. We don't see people fight at their best anymore. So this is all just kind of a manifestation of years of boxing being purely about money. And I think money's going to become so easy to get in the boxing game from promotion and social media that, as you said, it's going to be Hay via promoter, and it's going to be a YouTuber via rapper. And there's no point in the actual being the best fighter anymore.
So I'm like you. I think, well, this is the beginning of the end. There's no way back from this.
None.
It's never happened. But then if you go, I can't think of any exact examples, but I know, you know, in the 1940s, who was it? Heavyweight. He boxed an actual bear. Like, you know, they've had these gimmicks and these ideas.
But they didn't have social media.
So now social media is the biggest prize, you know, prize. If you, people want to sign with Eddie Hearn, like, not necessarily because he'll pay them the most money or he'll get them the most, develop their talent the most. The first thing they know, as long as he's got a million followers on Instagram. Like,
yeah.
I want that. Like, imagine if he tweets about me. He Instagrams about me.
Yeah.
How many likes I'm going to get, you know?
Mayweather Hatton did less buys than Logan Paul Mayweather.
But it's a different era, like you said. It's easier to buy. People are more used to buying pay per views now. I think it's easier to purchase pay per view. There's more pay per view channels out there, so people are used to it. Plus, it's easier to advertise a fight because, you know, just get pumped. You know, everyone's glued to their phone now, and they're going to see it, live and breathe it, and they got to watch it. So
it's very unfair on the likes of you, though, in the era that went before, that we are now seeing people make so much money from boxing when guys were giving their life in the ring and making one quarter of the amount. And it's the same in every single sport. Marcus Rashford made more money than Eric Cantona. And that's just the way it goes. Popularization of things ruins the quality, music, film, sport. And boxing's now become the victim. And it's goodnight Vienna. It's done. We will never see someone give a shit about being a top boxer again. Which is terrible, because it diminishes nearly your legacy in a way. Because by the time everyone's grown up in 20 years, the Ewan Froch thing, one of the last great fights, packed at Wembley, the biggest in British history at the time. By the time you're telling people the story on the bar stool at 50, they're just going to be fucking watching people dance with boxing gloves on, and that's a bigger deal. what actually happens to the legacies of people who lived in the normal world, especially post-COVID, when everybody is so fucking mental now, having spent 2 years in their gaff, sitting on their phone like fucking weirdos baking banana bread. What actually happens to people who were famous and huge in the normal world? Nothing. You just kind of have to reinvent yourself. Get new Barnett. Yep. Change your name and delete your past, basically, is what we're looking at now.
But it depends on how much you want it, you know, and
how much pride do you take in the life you've had?
Oh, a lot.
You
a
wake
lot.
Up in the morning and go, I fought George Grove, or I fought Carl Froch.
I fought myself a lot of times as well. No, I think for me personally, as time goes on, I'm a little bit more happier and content with what I achieved. You know, I want to be the greatest of all time. You know, I wanted, as a kid, wanted to be world champion, wanted to be rich and famous. You know, and then as you get older, you realize, well, I can sack off the fame. You know, I'd just rather be rich. You know, and then the danger of boxing is that you linger there because it just becomes about money and nothing else. So I went full circle where I was just like, I hate boxing. I hate everyone in it. I hate everything about it. I just want a few quid, leave, and then job done. And then I came full circle. I was like, well, no, actually, I want to achieve a few things and be proud of stuff I have sort of got on and done. You know, I've made a few history. I've been involved in some huge fights, been involved in loads of pay-per-view fights, become a world champion, defended it, and now I can leave the sport happy, which is a blessing. It's a rarity.
Do you ever get paranoid about the health thing? Do you ever get a headache out of nowhere? Like everyone does and go, oh shit, I'm fucked here.
Well, yeah, there's some health things. I mean, I've had so you run your bloods and like your kidneys, you got the kidneys of a 70-year-old. Why is that? I was like, well, you know, you try cutting weight for 20 years, you know, you try, being on an extreme diet and crash, you know, stuff like that. And then you do another test like 6 months later, oh, your kidneys back to normal again. Oh, okay, great. I think just fluctuate. And it's part and parcel of the job. Like I would never, you know, you get older and you grow up a bit and you have new passions in life. But as a kid, there's nothing I wouldn't have give, you know, to be a professional boxer. So, but no concerns, really. I'll probably end up with dementia. Hopefully they figure some sort of cure, some way to live with it. Don't really want to be waffling onto my wife.
Do you think do you think you will probably get dementia? Yeah.
Well, yeah, been knocked out. The worst was on a boat, actually. So Barry O'Connell, I mentioned earlier, he's an ex-Royal Marine. He took me down to Limston. Probably not allowed to say this anyway, but they took me out on the military speedboat, show me how fast it goes. There's no seatbelts on that sort of thing, you know. They opened it up. It was a rainy day. Slipped. I think I flew over about three chairs and landed on the fourth row and knocked myself out. So that was pretty bad. That was the first day of camp for the Badu Jack fight. So, but yeah, I've had two broken jaws, dislocated shoulder, like knee problems, hand problems, about half a dozen cuts across the face, plenty of concussions. Like,
did you drink much during your boxing career? Like when you weren't in camp, would you go on the piss?
No. So I used to try and live the life. I'd probably average around twice a year. I'd get, out of it. Once at Christmas and once in the summer. When I was younger, like, you know, before I was professional, I was really started taking seriously, then you can get away with it as well. Yeah. Go out and have a few drinks. But no, I tried to live the life.
And would you ever do drugs? No.
No.
That you just can't get away with it.
Well, I never, it wasn't really my scene so by the time my friends were into it, I was already into, you know, the concept of health and boxing. So like, you know, 16, 17, 18. And so I never touched it then. And then since retiring, you know, I wasn't interested when I was fighting. So I'm not really interested in now. So no, but I was uber paranoid as well, so I never took paracetamol, never took, you know, cough medicine, never took nothing throughout my career because I didn't want something to flag up as a, you know, a positive on your anti-doping test, and people think you're juicing when really you just had a paracetamol the night before. So I didn't know. There's always that element and always that risk. So I should stay away from everything.
Is there boxers out there factually juicing that everyone knows are juicing, but you, they just can't get caught, and it's kind of bad form to rat them out or demand an investigation as a fellow pro?
It's such a, I think it's so clever now, like way beyond my capability. You need like a master's to figure out, you know, what is cheating and what's not. What, how do you push your, how do you go to the cusp of what's legal, what's not, you know? So but I'm sure there are a couple of fighters out there who are under the radar testing or have set new boundaries, because I, again I'm not exactly sure how it works, but you know, they'll do your passport blood, so they'll take your bloods and say, right, this is what your levels are to start with. But if you've been juicing for 5 years beforehand, then your levels can be way higher than someone who isn't. It might not be quite as clear cut as that, but there's ways to manipulate, I'm sure. Again, I wasn't really part of it. I don't really know.
So like Joshua's not, Joshua's clean. He's not juicing. Just a genetic freak.
He'll be tested probably a lot, you know, because he's so high profile, you know, and he hasn't tested positive. Fury's tested positive. Fury said he was eating dodgy meat out in Belgium, but he served a 2-year backdated ban for something or other. And then it coincided with depression and taking cocaine, I think, which he tested positive for as well. So lots of times you'll notice fighters who are about to test positive for an actual illegal substance also test positive for a recreational drug, and it sort of takes the light off of.
Is Fury Wilder 3, obviously it was contracted, but it's guaranteed it's just going to be Fury again?
I'd say so, but you never write Wilder off. I mean, he's a tremendous puncher, like ridiculous punch power. It looks like he's made some changes, and I genuinely thought he didn't look right in the build up to that second Fury fight. He come in really light. He was antsy. He was agitated. I don't know if he had some stuff going on in his personal life. I don't know if he had some contractual issues. You know, all these things play a massive part. Plus, like, he's a strange character, isn't he? He's a real strange character, and who knows what gets under his skin and don't let him perform. But if he gets some good prep in, and figures out how to release that right hand, he can beat Fury. He can easily beat Fury, because Fury's gone over time and time again in his career. You know, even he got dropped in the first fight with Wilder, even though that was
he was so long out of it though.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, what Fury's got to stay switched on. He's got, as long as he's in the gym and he hasn't lost the plot, then, and he doesn't think this is an easy fight because of his last performance, then you still got to favour Fury. He's such a big guy, you know, 6'8", 6'9".
And also, when it comes to boxing and shit, though, and you're betting on it, you bet what the businessman wants. And Fury losing to Wilder would be a disaster for every single TV company, for Eddie Hearn, for Anthony Joshua. It would be shocking. It would be terrible. It would lose millions. It's just not happening.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. So if you know, if it's tight on the cards, then usually it goes with the guy who makes the most money. But
that always happens in boxing.
Yeah, well, it's I don't know how it works. Whether it's an unwritten rule, whether judges just know that's the case. Whether there's some brown paper envelopes that float around or not. I think we're past them days to a certain degree, especially in the big fights, in the high profile fights. But do you know what's interesting? They never tell you how to score a fight. Like, I was a professional for 10 years. I don't know how to win a round, you know. It's like, how do you win a round? It's like
activity, isn't it?
Well, is it? You know, if I can control the position in the ring, so I can force you into positions I want, but I don't throw any punches and I land one big shot at the end of the round. You've peppered me with 15 jabs, but I've just knocked your head off at the end of the round. Who wins the round? Oh. I don't know. it's just opinion. It's interpretation.
But would Mayweather know? Mayweather would know how to win a fight on the cards.
Well, you say you know how to win a round. It's like, don't get hit. Hit him more. Hit him harder. But it's not always as clear and clean cut as that. He fights Maidana, who just bum rushes him the entire fight, bullies him, just keeps, won't let him settle, won't let him pot shot, like just keeps nudging him and firing. He might throw, you know, 80 to 100 punches a round, land 6 body shots. Mayweather's hit him with 6 right hands. Who wins a round?
Are you actually punching the head off each other in sparring? Are you trying to knock each other out?
Everyone different, like different coaches, like different style, boxers, like different style. I used to make it as realistic as possible. So yeah, like I was trying to ice all the sparring partners, like want to put them away, do it calmly, and obviously if they're not at your level, then you go easy. You're not going to, you know, if I've got like a skilled amateur or a, you know, two bout sort of novice pro, I'm not going to try and put them away. But if I've brought in sparring, then they're getting paid to get bashed up. That's the job. Like if I usually we're flying a few guys and
have you ever got brought in to spar for someone else?
Yeah. So sometimes I'd go away and if they'd offer to pay me, I'd say no. So then it's like, especially if I thought I might end up being on their radar later on, it's like, I don't want to be your bitch. Like, yeah. You don't pay me for sparring. So I'll show up and we'll spar, and then it's all half on my terms as well. So if I'm feeling tired that day, or I'd rather go and do a hill sprint or something like that, then I can tell them no. But if a few times I've been away, I've been paid for sparring. So you're sort of like, they tell you what time to show up, how many rounds you're going to do.
Canelo or anyone ever asked
you? No, you might have heard of. I'd been out to spar Kessler, actually, before the Frotch fight. So that's what upset Frotch. The reason I did it was to get a few headlines, really.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, Kez is number one of the best fighters in the division, world champion. So, want to go out there and test myself against him. It didn't really work out, especially there for a week. I only had one spar, something happened, came home.
Why are you and Frotch doing this tour now? Is it a build up to possibly get back in there?
I don't think so. Someone came and pitched the idea to us, and I can speak to Carl now. I can call him. So what do you think? Any good? And you go, you know, he shoots from the hip. And sometimes if I don't want to tell someone something, he's the guy to send in.
Yeah,
I say,
yeah,
that's no good. Or we want more money. Or we want this one, that. But it's something to do. It's a bit, it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it, you know. And I think maybe even just, nice to go and talk about old times.
Do you like him?
He's all right. I didn't like him for an awful long time, and I probably still didn't really like him up until the point where we sort of...
What was he like after he beat you?
Well, I just avoided him, but...
Yeah, what do you do?
I probably hated him more. I hated him a lot more. So the first fight back I had was Wembley Arena, and it was on Sky, and Sky brought him in for main comms, and it's like, obviously they're going to do that, it's like great for their viewing, but for me, I'm like, he's going to mug me off. And he did. He said, I think he's been frotched, or he's been cobra'd or something like that, like he ain't the same. And I was just livid, fuming with it. I was like, is this what I deserve? Like,
is it embarrassing everything? Getting knocked out in front of that many people, or is it because it's your job and you're a pro, you're kind of immune to it?
No, it's embarrassing. It's really embarrassing.
What was the first thing you remember after he put you on the ground?
So I got up, looked at the corner. I was like, because the referee, by the time I got up, the referee was waving it off. I looked at the corner to say, is this another stitch up? And they were like, nah. And shaking their head, and I was like, oh, fucking all right. I've been knocked out. Jesus, where the fuck did that come from? Like, and then it's just like, okay, right, performance time. What do we do? How do I play this? What do I want? You've come this far. Don't lose the momentum. Don't lose the fans' support. Don't lose your value. Like, sit down. What does that mean? Be humble, be respectful, understand it. Be disappointed, show emotion, but don't be a fucking minge. Don't, you know, like, that's how I'm very calculated.
When you're in the ring afterwards and they're holding his hand up though, and he's kind of small because he knocked you out and he told you he was going to knock you out, do you feel like giving him another dig there?
I think by that point, the major emotion was just like grief, you know. So there's, you know, you never, that's anger, like grief was overwhelming. I couldn't throw a punch in grief. But yeah, later on you're like, wouldn't mind giving him a dig. But also he's got such a good chin, you're like, oh, it wouldn't even be satisfying. And punch him straight on the button and he just bounce off him, it'd take like probably a few.
How would he have acted if you beat him? Like, would he be doing this tour now with you if you'd won?
I think he was right at the end of his rope. Like, he'd had a long, successful career, and I'd put him through hell up until our fight, and it was like a Hollywood ending for him. You know, that was like, you know, it felt like he'd been neglected his entire career. He hadn't had the respect he deserved. He hadn't had the paydays he deserved.
Never fought Calzaghe.
Never fought Calzaghe. Never got.
Who would have poked the head off him?
I think, yeah, Carlos Aguirre would have been just...
And you.
Too quick.
Because Aguirre would have done you too, wouldn't he?
Nah, I would have put him away.
Really?
Nah. Carlos Aguirre was...
A freak.
Just a big, very big, strong, fast, fit dude, like, who's to throw an awful lot of punches. I wouldn't want to have fought him. But at the same time, I would love to afford him. You know, it's weird. Like, as the fighter, it still don't leave you. Like, you're like, I'd have been in. No one would have beat me.
Yeah.
On my day, no one. You get criticism for that, but it's like, no one would have beat me.
I find that with all boxers. Like, we'd Steve Collins on.
Yeah.
He wasn't sure to hopping over the microphone and punching the head off me.
Yeah.
And it was via Zoom.
Yeah.
The guy was fucking insane. Screaming at me saying, Mike Tyson knows his name. What the fuck do I know? All I said was Eubank passed his best when you fought him.
Yeah. Collins is quality. And I don't know. I know he struggled. I know there was times where he didn't get the record. He was tough. He was out in the LA gyms and stuff like that. But he beat them dudes on just physicality.
Yeah, psycho.
But that's like... I think we're in a different era now where that's not enough, you know. I mean, I adore Nigel Benn, like, but you look back and look at the way he fought so many times, he would run the risk of just getting beat so many times. So many times he would have gassed out. You know, it's all or nothing. There was nothing clever about anything he did. It's just that most people would drown in their own anxiety, knowing that if you don't put him away anytime soon, he's not going to go away.
Would you have yourself in top 10 British boxers ever?
Top 10? Yeah, I've got to be top 10.
Would you? You got Calzaghe.
So top 10.
Fury.
Oh, sorry, I was thinking of super middleweights.
No. Oh.
Yeah, top 10, probably not. But I personally, yeah, I could have been. Like, I could have been better.
You were better than Prince Nassim.
Could have been better, but it's all subjective. It's all opinionated, and it's what is the driving force of boxing. But it's also what can make you despise it the most. There's no fact involved in it whatsoever, you know. So
that's what makes it so sad when something like a punch does knock you out in the big fight against Froch.
Yeah,
because you still, even though you're getting up off the ground, not knowing where you are, you still think you're better than him after the fight. It's a very weird world to live in. Burnley players leave the Etihad Stadium knowing we're not as good as them. They scored more goals. But boxers have a unique ability to get up off the canvas, not be able to speak, and tell us that they were unfortunate.
Yeah.
What a crazy way to live. What was it like mentally after the Froch thing? For a few, were you acting weird? Were you lashing out on loved ones?
I went away the next day. It wasn't booked, but we went away. Me and my wife went to Dubai for 5 days. And... even then, I was just, I was like, right, let's get away from boxing, let's switch off, like, need to switch off, but I couldn't. I'd just done a deal, I'd signed with Sauland, the German boxing promoters, and Kalle Sauland was one I dealt with most from there, and I was already on the phone to Kalle, like, 2 days into being away. How do we get back? What's the next route? Let's do this. I'm going through the rankings. WBC looks like... it's good. Can you keep my WBC? I've ranked number one pretty much with everyone up until that point. Can you keep my ranking with WBC? Let's go through who else is ranked. Oh, and we literally got to what the next fight would be within a week of the Froch fight. And then I got back and I was back in the gym. It was like, I'm sure a psychiatrist would have an excellent way to explain it. But it's like, I didn't deal with it at all, probably. And there would have been loads of... That camp was really tough. Like, I realised that I must have been hugely stressed because fat sticks to me when I'm stressed, you know. I couldn't shift the weight.
Does that just mean because you're eating and move? Like,
no, I'm not eating. So, you know, you got to lose weight. So you either, you know, cut down the calories so you eat less or you train more. But you need to... marry that with your metabolism because your metabolism goes into fight or flight. It's like being stuck on Everest, I think. Do you know what I mean? You're like, right. I never used to do long runs up until that camp where I had to do long runs like 2-3 times a week to try and get the weight off.
The proper Rocky Balboa ones.
But it didn't, well, it was, yeah. It didn't work, you know. And then the body shape don't look right. You know, you look skinny fat. You know, like your muscle's gone, just lost. And then sometimes when you have a fantastic camp and your weight's good and you're like, I'm eating more than ever. And then, but you're losing the weight because, you know, everything, your hormone levels are right or whatnot. I don't know. But yeah, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. But it probably took me years and years. I probably wasn't over the first frotch fight.
Well, how does the money go into your account after like that frotch fight?
The fight generated probably around 10, and I was on the shit side of that.
So boxers lie about what they get per fight.
Yeah.
So
when,
you know,
to keep throwing Fury under the bus, but Fury reckons he got $7-8 million for the first Wilder fight and gave it all to charity. I don't see how, when Wilder was getting like $1-2 million a fight, why they'd pay Fury $7 million when he's been out of shape and come out of nowhere and no one in America's heard of him up to that point. Why would they pay him that much money to, you know? I think like when Mayweather puts a number out there, I think most of the time that's pretty true.
Like he's getting $200 million for a fight.
Well, like when he first moved over from HBO to Showtime and he was on $32 million minimum, that was guaranteed purse and then an upside. And I'm sure the Canelo stuff is about the same, but Canelo done this mega deal with DAZN and then it sort of fell out of bed straight away. He left Golden Boy and I signed with Matchroom. They're getting mega money, but yeah, the money comes in. Like you do, you make sure that's, you know, where you have a good lawyer. You're like, right, okay, when am I getting paid? Because it takes a long time for that money to get, like the pay per view money, say. So everyone's got to pay their fee at the end of the month. So then Sky collect it, then Sky divvy it up, then you order it, then it goes to the promoter, then it goes to me, and I don't really want to wait 90 days to get paid for the frotch fight.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, give me the gate up front. Like, give me a percentage of the gate up front. You've got that money already. I'll pay for my own camp. I'll spend as much as I want on my own camp and just make sure I get my whole purse, you know, rather than paying your manager a higher percentage and he'll cover some camp costs.
You didn't need to be embarrassed. It's an outrageous thing to do in your life, even once. Like, if you look at it in an overall way and how many human beings there is in the world, who really gives a shit that you took a punch from some old guy from Nottingham? You got a few million quid.
No, it's no good, man. It's no good. So he's a lifetime's work gone into that moment. Like, and you're talking about being a perfectionist. You know? So it's not just like, oh, that fight's done. I'm not like that. Some fighters might be like, oh, I got paid. Well, at least I got another one. It's, you know, Klitschko's were famous for, they bring their opponents in, they pay them a fee, but they give them two fights after if they lost. So these fighters, they're content. They're happy. They don't mind getting beat because they know they're getting another million quid on the back end after two fights.
It's an old school attitude, yes. It's valuing the art actually ahead of what it brings.
Yeah.
So you must be proper out of touch with the way it's going now. Like proper out of touch, isolating nearly.
Well, you'll be uncaring because otherwise you just become miserable. Do you know what I mean? You just become annoyed and frustrated. Like, I just want to appreciate something good, you know, and if it don't come along, then well, I won't watch it. But some things are good and there's a lot of talent fighters out there. It's just the fun. It's like music. It's like you want to discover something good basically before they blow up and everyone else knows about them.
Mm. What do you give a shit about now?
Yeah, so I've got two young kids who are left to death. You know, I don't want, they become more important than myself. So I'm talking about that earlier on, being like a narcissist, just being self-absorbed. It's all about you. You know, I'm not that anymore because they sort of come first now. Like I don't want to go into camp with kids because I don't want to get up early. I wouldn't want to waste time looking after them. And that's brutal because that would be my mindset if I was a fighter still.
And you've gone off Chelsea.
Getting out of the house. Well, I haven't followed, not I haven't gone off, I mean, I watch them on telly, but I just don't follow football nowhere near as much as what I did before. And it's I realised very quickly that it's very difficult to catch up. Like, there's so many players, so many teams, so much
going
on.
Why don't you follow it?
Boxing took up an awful lot of time, you know.
You had the Chelsea badge on the shorts for the frotch fight. Was that a stunt to get more fans in then, or was that a genuine tribute to Chelsea Football Club?
No, I mean, my I used to go to Chelsea. I was never a season ticket holder, but my cousins are, my uncle is. I used to go down there. I mean, when I was younger, I used to go to the games semi-regularly. They used to get me lots of tickets to go to the away games. Used to go, and I'm talking about the era when, like, you know, it's like Lampard, Terry, and now, you know, I feel like it hops and changes so many. All the names are like names that I can't read, so I need to know them and hear them.
You watched the Champions League final, obviously, for example.
Yeah. But I didn't go. You know, years ago, I would have been itching to go if I could, but and then the pandemic just killed it for me. I couldn't watch football. I couldn't even watch it on telly when there's no crowd. It just spin me out. I couldn't. It didn't feel like football anymore. It felt like some weird sort of training thing. I watched England, but I jumped on the bandwagon once they got to about the semis. I gave up on England Euro 96. Crying in my bed. I was 8 years old, and then I thought. And then when you're at school, you know, all your mates love football. You know everything about every player. You know, you're either trading stickers in the Premier League, or then became Championship Manager game. And I just watched the results come in. I had a little football bet with my dad on a, you know, on a Saturday. And then...
Because Paul Gascoigne slid too late. It's not worth the heartbreak anymore.
No, it's not. It's not. I feel like we got progressively worse until I stopped watching. I stopped watching friendlies like a long time ago.
Yeah, they should be barred from sport. People think George Groves is around 38, 40.
Not now with a hair, though. It took 10 years off. But I'm 33. I retired at 30. I had my last fight and my last camp was the worst I'd ever had. You know, and but the thing was, like, you know, I was getting on with the team, lovely team, great place I was training. Had some contractual problems, was arguing with the promoters as always. But and then they said it in Saudi. Trying to get fit with a busted shoulder was a nightmare. And then it got to that point where you're like, I don't think I'm fully fit, but I think I'm good enough to win. I can either walk away from a significant payday with another prestigious belt, the Ring Magazine belt on the line, roll the dice and see if it comes again, or take the fight, hope you win, and then go out on top. That was the plan. That was the dream. Like, I felt like I had an exit strategy from Froch, but the exit strategy kind of changed. After losing to Badu Jack, it was like, right, okay, I'm going to call it a day. I'm going to find what is life instead of boxing, instead of life after boxing. Decided no, shaved the head, grew the beard, changed the team, started to wear black, reinvented myself, had another run at it. Less than 2 years later, win the belt, signed to go into this tournament, and it's like, all right, that's the end, that's the end dream, man. Like, I'd seriously hurt a chap called Eddie Goodnecht in a nothing bout before the world title, put him in a wheelchair. You know, he's still trying to rehab himself now.
Are you still in touch with him and the family?
Little bit. Like, not as much as we was before, but we get updates and stuff like that.
And is he...
I don't know. I don't know what like how you describe it, but he...
Does he have brain damage? Like?
Yeah, he's got brain damage. So...
Should that fight have been stopped?
Yeah. Yeah, should have been stopped way before then.
Were you thinking while you were fighting, why hasn't this been stopped?
It was one of them ones where I think the corner had to pull him out because I didn't really hurt him enough for the referee to step in.
Yeah.
And it sounds really ignorant to say, but it's like, it wasn't a big fight for me. It wasn't like making money on the table. I felt like no one was watching, no one cared. It was time to keep busy. So I'm not out there to put on a show. Yeah. So I'm out there just to make sure I win. I've got a world title coming next. Just don't make any mistakes. I end up going the distance. So I didn't really have it in me to sort of put together that finishing thing that might have finished him. But in some ways, maybe good I didn't. I think the corner, knowing the fight, knowing where it was going, like, they could have pulled him out. They could have pulled him out after 7-8 rounds and no one's going to be up in arms going, I want my money back. You know, that was a waste of time. You know, they left him in there too long. And tragedy happens, you know. So, I mean, it was more poignant for us because Eubank had hurt Nick Blackwell, you know, like a month or two before in the UK. So we'd all seen that. It was against another Brit. And I was sparring Blackwell ahead of his Eubank fight. So... you know, that was really close to home for us. And then that happened, you know, literally a month or two later. And it's just like, I don't really like boxing much these days. But I can't leave it now. You know, I still ain't had enough out of it. If I win the world title, I've got to pay the mortgage off. So signed into the tournament before the Chudinov fight. It was going to be 3 fights in 12 months, come out, mega money, and got a couple more belts along the way, a couple of prestige, and I got out on top. Like, absolutely, who's going to top that? All of a sudden, I'll go from down here to, you know, way up in people's, you know, opinions.
But that ruined it, the kind of, in a way, like the concept that a guy, his brain stopped functioning for the sake of this pursuit of kind of boxing glory. Like, that would completely sour the taste of any kind of memories you have of boxing, in a way, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, I think I was going through a bit of a change as well. So I become a dad in the summer. And so that you know, that softens you. It's hard to say that as a man, you know, as an alpha male, when you're a fighter and you want to, you know, you think you're a psychopath. You think you're a, you know, you think you're a killer. You know, you want to be. That's how I used to think about myself. You know, you shut the door and it's just like, whoosh, and I'll go about my business. You know, stone cold. And then the kids soften you a touch, and you're like, and then that happened with Eddie, and I was like, oh, right. Luckily for me, and it is luckily for me, that the Chudinov fight was next, the world title was next, and then I had these 3 fights. Because once I'd beat Chudinov, it would have been like, what next? Do I play the Joker again and, you know, chase a DeGale fight, and we've got to do a little song and dance, and we've got to do this? And by that point, I'm like, I don't really want to be the whore anymore. Like, I don't want to be that. You know, it's not me. I've done it. It's good fun at the time, but I ain't fighting for anyone else anymore, you know. But this tournament was like, right, you're gonna get paid pay-per-view money, whether it sells or not. Great. Who do I fight? Well, you get first choice. It's like, okay, you let me pick who I'll fight. You're gonna pay me that much money? Okay, great. I'll have that. And then we angled it. I knew once I realized Eubank was in, I was like, right, we'll have Eubank in the semis, because you know, there was some perks to that, and then whoever it was going to be was going to be in the final. They didn't really get all the world champions in like we'd hoped.
I was flicking through channels there around 2 months ago, and you and Frost were fighting on Sky Sports Retro. Would you keep that on?
I don't watch the ones where I get beat. I don't even watch the first one now. I feel like at the time, and for so long, I was totally fine with the first loss. I was like, well, you know, everyone knows it was an injustice. It was corrupt. It was that, you know. But then I feel like at some point I realised, well, no, maybe like my problems with the whole situation stemmed right away back to that one, to getting beat then. So I don't watch anything where I get beat. I'd back Joshua. You get better odds, man. And I think.
But is that because you know him better?
No, I'm not. I've met Joshua once, maybe. I know Fury better. Me and Fury were sort of the same age on camp together a little bit. I mean, I haven't spoken to him in years and years and years. But, yeah, I just think, why not, eh? How surprising,
too skilled, though,
how surprising would that be? Yeah, but Joshua's a lump, and he's a big old lump. And he knows how to... I think Joshua knows how to get good people around him. Like, it might have taken him a little while, and he might have got stuck with a few people that were holding him back a touch. But he'll get himself in right good shape for that fight. He'll be up for it. And if he gets his tactics right, it could be a right barnstormer. Fury, you got to say, he went to Germany and beat Klitschko. He went to America and beat Wilder. You know, he's got the better resume.
He's kind of he's a genius of boxing in ways, though, as well, isn't he?
No, I wouldn't go that far. I think Fury, you know, he's very good. I mean, he's just so big, and he can do stuff that them guys of that size can't do. But, you know, you talk about Wilder was 3 stone lighter than him in the last fight. You know, in some ways, it's not a fair fight. You know, heavyweights, if you're going to talk, like, if you want to break it down analytically, you always want to sort of steer away from the heavyweight division, because it's not really a fair fight. It's like Usyk Joshua next month. That's exciting for me. That's really exciting. So we're talking about, you know, Fury's definitely going to beat Wilder. what about, is Joshua definitely going to beat Usyk? Because if Usyk was 6'6 and 18 stone, I think he'd be the favorite going into that fight. He's only got size against him, but he could turn it all on his head. You know, he might just be a little bit too slick and too
I just have the Joshua. Cynical view that they wouldn't risk it unless they knew.
Joshua, I mean, there's always a risk with Joshua. There's always a risk in heavyweight division, but there's always a risk with Joshua. You know, I think they probably believe that when he switched on, he can beat anyone. And that'll include Fury. And they would have learned from their mistakes with the Ruiz fight. But they took risk with Povetkin, who, you know, they took risks with, I mean, Klitschko tried to roll back the clock and come over and... after a long
Dillian White was a risk. Why doesn't he get one of the big boys in the ring? Why didn't they put him in with Wilder?
I think he doesn't want that. You know,
does he not? No.
I mean, White. He priced himself out of the first Joshua fight. He's a clever man, White. You know, and he's getting paid. He's on the A side of a pay per view fight against. It feels like at the time it probably feels like big names. You know, like Joseph Parker and a few others. But really, he's doing awfully well for himself with no real massive amateur pedigree to come out. He had the big fight against Joshua where he lost, and then he's rebuilt himself and he's become a real likable guy. He's been number one contender for so long, and that's kind of like his niche. It's been this long. I don't know why someone hasn't been able to force him into a sort of mandatory position. It's like he's had like numerous final eliminators, and now they're finally talking about a final eliminator, which... a mandatory position, which has dragged on and on because, you know, the heavyweights are just jostling with each other to try and get Joshua Fury.
Well, it's good to talk some real sport and actually talk about it, considering that the sport is dying in front of our eyes and popular social media is killing it all. George Rose, thanks for coming back on the Michael Anthony Show. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Top man.
It's been how many years, my boy?
Audio books, David.
You still don't know my tears of joy. No need to go, just take it slow.
Podcast.
And have you heard the Michael Anthony Show?
Fine.
What's it help to see?
It makes me see the light.
What about those tears?
Tears believe my eyes.
How's it make you feel?
It makes me feel